Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Guitar. Baby's got a habit, diamond rings and Fendi sports bras. Riding down Rodeo in my Maserati sports car. Got no stress, I've been through.
Chris Whitty here on 560 WQAM here until 10 p.m. this evening. We talked about this song last week, and I have since done nothing but listen to this song. I was late. I was, as usual, I'm not on the latest with music. I think it can be hard. Now, it can also be very easy if you're interested enough. But you have your Spotify. You know the music you like already. Sometimes you're not always in a discovery type of mood. And so I did not know this was the number one song in America until Hialeah Hector, our producer today, played it last Thursday. And I have done nothing but listen to the song since. There are many YouTube videos. He was here in Miami. Lil Nas X was here in this studio. I saw a photograph, awkwardly, with the cast and crew of the Hockman and Crowder show in the other room that's behind where you are right now, Hector, taking a picture with Lil Nas X. And actually, that takes us into our code word, because it is the number one hit record. And that is our code word for this hour. It's time for your chance to win $1,000. It's 560 WQAM's Take Dono's Dollars Contest. Your chance to take home $1,000. Text the word RECORD to 72881, or record. And you are registered. That is RECORD, RECORD, 72881 now. If you don't win this time, your next chance is tomorrow morning with Joe Rose and Zach Krantz. This is a national contest. Message data rates may apply. Please do not text and drive. And it's all brought to you by Anajar and Levine, accident attorneys. Call 1-800-747-FREE. So again, RECORD is your code word for the hour. Producer of the afternoon show, Eric Falero, cannot make fun of me today for being forgetful. It is among my many faults as a radio talent, is that I forget things that producers want me to do all the time. And so we've got that covered. We're good to go for the remainder of the show. We have no more code words. It's Joe Rose and Zach Krantz having you covered tomorrow morning. So again, code word this hour is record. We got a lot to get to on today's program. We're going to be talking to Paul Jones, who is the radio voice of the Toronto Raptors, about Eastern Conference Game 1, which I thought was fantastic last night, just in terms of back and forth, and really as a sort of entree into what we're going to be seeing from that series. The television ratings were not that high, as you might have expected, because I think the close to 2 million viewers that are attracted in Canada don't count for TNT, because it's an entirely separate broadcast. It doesn't count here in the U.S., but the number is not as high here in the U.S. And you know, it was actually funny, because I was watching the highlights before the show. It was kind of a refresher, and it is kind of stark to realize, oh, Milwaukee and Toronto is the conference finals. I mean, you watch them, and it's on TNT. It has all the trappings of the conference finals, and yet you just see the two teams on the floor, and it doesn't feel like the highest level of basketball. And yet, I think you could argue that the teams might even be better than the teams out west, and it might be closer to 2 versus 3 than, you know, 1 versus 4 in the Western Conference. And yet there's just something about seeing new blood. And that's the thing that the NBA kind of has to get over right now and really has to power through and embrace, is new blood is fundamental to a league rising, right? Because the Super Bowl is the biggest event in the year, and it almost doesn't even matter the teams. Obviously, you would prefer let the teams at least provide entertainment. I think ultimately what will allow this series to grow as it goes on is that those two teams are entertaining to watch. Toronto and Milwaukee play very good basketball. Milwaukee in particular, for me, are so great to watch. I mean, they make 25% of their threes on 44 attempts and still manage 104 points in a home victory. That number will go up if those threes start to go in. But the Super Bowl is meant to be a league, and the NFL does a remarkable job of this, where, I mean, pick whatever you believe to be the least attractive team in either conference. I don't know, Buffalo, just in terms of market size. I mean, obviously the Bills have existed for a long time, but, I mean, Buffalo, or, let's call it Jacksonville, right? So Jacksonville represented the AFC. I mean, for years it is the game that no one wanted to watch, and yet, when they played in the conference championship, you eventually got excited for Jacksonville. In the NFC, I'm going through all the teams right now, probably Detroit, maybe Arizona. But when Arizona played in the Super Bowl, that was exciting. You eventually got to a stage where you were excited about Arizona being in the Super Bowl. And that is the strength of the NFL. The NFL has done a brilliant job of, first off, using scarcity to their advantage. They've got 16 games. Every one of them feels important. But also, through fantasy football and storyline and night games and just the media machine that surrounds the NFL, every team feels important. Every team feels like there's something on the line when they play. You know the storyline for the most part of every team. The Dolphins fans just interacted with Arizona. Maybe they're not terribly interested in the Arizona Cardinals, but when their quarterback was available, Dolphins fans knew to be excited or, oh, this is an interesting opportunity because that league narrative is built. And so that's the genius of football. That's what they've done well. And the NBA can't really become that level, right? First off, I mean, let's be honest. A conference finals game drew 5.8 million viewers. Anyone who thinks they're anywhere near the NFL, I mean, 5.8 million viewers, even on cable, is a, like, worst case scenario NFL Network only Thursday night game. So they are so far away. But part of the reason why, and, you know, people talk about, oh, these playoffs are missing LeBron. I'm not missing LeBron at all. I've had my fill. But I'm also a dork, but I really like basketball. I, over the course of the year, have learned the narrative of Milwaukee. However, I don't think that a majority of NBA fans, or a majority of sports fans, right? Because basketball, football, baseball are the sports that draw in sports fans. I think for the most part, if you're a hockey fan, you're just a hockey fan. Or maybe it's, you know, you follow your team along with the other. But I don't think, you know, your casual hockey fan is really tuning in for games that don't involve your team, right? And it's reflected in the numbers. Just as I think soccer fans are soccer fans. That number is growing, particularly amongst young people, that maybe it's part of their general sporting diet. But the general sports fan is football, basketball, and baseball. And so I do think that that general sports fan is aware of Giannis and maybe saw him once or twice on national TV over the course of the year, but it's not quite the level that obviously LeBron and Golden State and Houston, their narratives are so well told, their stories are so well known that I don't think there's really any difficulty accessing these Eastern Final or, you know, any series involving those three teams. But now that these Eastern Finals don't involve those teams and involve Portland in the West, it's an entirely new thing to learn for a majority of the fans watching on television. And that's sort of what needs to happen in the short term, right? Is that every team needs to have these sort of flashpoints in the postseason, and you have to have a league that can sustain Toronto being in the postseason. And fans are interested all across the country, not just in Toronto, not even just in Canada, although I think that's kind of the underrated thing, is that an entire country is behind one team. And so Toronto has that behind them. But the NBA can't really be a strong league until all 30 teams have that level of relevance. And it's going to be tested because Toronto is in the postseason. Milwaukee, which has long been the punchline on the joke of, if you wanted to say a city in the NBA that didn't really matter, you'd say Milwaukee, probably. Oklahoma City is in that conversation, certainly in the modern era, but it's always, what? Is LeBron James really going to go to Milwaukee in free agency? Is Dwayne Wade really going to go to Milwaukee in free agency? Who's going to go to Milwaukee? That's the joke, particularly here, because, I mean, we have that sort of ability to sort of look our, you know, look down upon other NBA cities that aren't nearly as attractive as Miami. The Miami fans have the ability, with stars having come here, with it being warm, with it being glamorous, that Miami's an attractive destination, whereas some other NBA cities like Milwaukee are not. But they've done really well to build a team. As a matter of fact, and I want to get to this with Paul Jones later on in the show, the team that they've built is the best team in the playoffs. Team. Now, collection of superstar talent? No. Philly had better superstar talent. Golden State obviously has better superstar talent. Houston has better superstar talent, just in terms of having multiple, right? Whereas Middleton and Bledsoe, who are the second, third best players in theory for the Milwaukee Bucks, are just not at that level. I mean, you could even argue that maybe Toronto with Kawhi and Pascal Siakam has more of that than Milwaukee does. But team, guys that you go to nine deep, there aren't NBA teams right now that are surviving nine deep. And they just have a really solid, well-built team. And Giannis Antetokounmpo is their star. But Milwaukee has to play in these games with their Greek superstar, with their non-other stars, and go to game sevens and compete in finals and go deep in a series with Golden State, so that when Milwaukee go again next year, fans like, oh yeah, Milwaukee. Just as, by the way, these things can happen very quickly, because Golden State was in exactly the same place when their run started. Would you have turned on a Golden State game sort of its own volition in 2012? No. Golden State was an irrelevant team. There was actually a story that was done by NBC Sports Bay Area. They interviewed the Curry parents, because Dale Curry, I forget the mother's name, forgive me, are obviously having to root for two sons that are on two opposite teams in the same series. And so the parents are being interviewed. One is wearing a Seth Curry jersey, the other wearing a Steph Curry jersey. And in the interview, they were talking about Steph Curry going to Golden State originally, and Del Curry apparently called Don Nelson and said, don't do it. And apparently his wife said, where is Golden State? Where is Golden State? Not, I mean, okay, it's in California. Where in California do they play? It's, where is Golden State? And that's kind of how off the radar. I mean, the only thing that in the modern era I really remember about Golden State is, you know, they're among the few teams in the modern era as an 8 seed to have beaten a 1 seed. When a team led by Baron Davis beat the Dallas Mavericks led by Dirk Nowitzki the year before they won the championship. That's really the only thing I remember about them. And I remember watching those games going, oh, those crowds are pretty good. Those fans are really into it. They've got good fans there. But Golden State was on the level of Milwaukee, despite being in the Bay Area, despite being in Oakland. They're on the level of Milwaukee, of Toronto, of teams that were less fancy, less desired, but because they got all the way, they played a fun style of basketball. Steph Curry was emerging as this once-in-a-lifetime kind of superstar, as Giannis Antetokounmpo is. You got to be familiar with what Golden State offers as an entertainment proposition, and fans ended up becoming excited, and they're now the primary draw in the NBA. I would say even above LeBron. People say all the time that there is Warriors fatigue, right? That people are just sick of the Warriors, they're sick of them winning, and yet there is no evidence to back that up. Their TV ratings are still high. People, I've read stories about, Jackie McMullen gave an interview the other day, the NBA writer for ESPN, that basically what they're told is that you can't write enough about the Warriors, people read it. And if there is Warriors fatigue, that wouldn't be true. People are still really into the Warriors, but the Warriors are a creation. They're a creation of the NBA's league narrative machine, and they've done an incredible job to become now this entertainment vehicle that people tune in to either watch the Warriors be incredible at basketball or root for them to fail. But either way, people are tuning in to watch them, and that is a departure from where they were as a franchise 20 years ago. So in these Eastern Finals, maybe you think, Toronto, Milwaukee, I don't know if I need to sit down in front of my television tonight. It doesn't feel like must-watch viewing. All I'm going to tell you is you're going to turn on the game, you're going to be entertained, and eventually you will think of Milwaukee and Toronto, presuming that, you know, Toronto keeps Kawhi Leonard and Milwaukee keeps going as an organization. You will think of them on the kind of level that you think of the other top teams in the NBA. And yes, LeBron's not in it. He's not in the conversation for the finals for an 8th straight season. But you know what? Or for a ninth straight season. But new stars are going to have to emerge. LeBron's not going to be in the league forever. And I think the NBA is now at a place that it wasn't in 1998 when Michael Jordan left. And you're going, oof, I don't know if there's anything. There's something. There's enough talent. There are enough stars. There are enough great players. And there's enough great basketball. Because that's the other thing, is that, let's be honest, the Pat Riley Heat, the Pat Riley Knicks, those series, and in general, the style of play of basketball was just not as fun to watch. You're going to be entertained when you turn on your television and watch Milwaukee-Toronto, Golden State-Portland. Those are offensively fun teams that are high-scoring, incredible guard play that is really entertaining to watch. They're entertaining basketball teams. And maybe you're not into it now, but all I'm here to tell you is you will be. Chris Whittingham, here until 10 on WQAM. Joining him here until 10 p.m. on 560 WQAM. Now, we are a Miami-based radio show, and Hector, who is proudly Hialeah on the other side of the glass, I have a question for you. The New York Times crossword on Sunday had the following clue. Name a city, five letters long, famous for its Cuban sandwiches. What would your answer have been?
Miami.
Incorrect. The New York Times has decided that Tampa is the city in the United States of America that is famous for its Cuban sandwiches. Now, they have been forced to apologize. Here is their tweet. Dear at City of Miami, we are truly sorry. Both your Cuban sandwiches and the city of Tampa's Cuban sandwiches are terrific. In fact, we feel that there's room for all sandwiches on life's lunch menu. Hope all is forgiven. And to that we say, no, not all is forgiven. How could that possibly happen? Tampa? Come on.
No shot.
No shot. And so apparently, I didn't realize this, that apparently there are different versions. So this is from a story from NPR. They decided to explore what they called the beef between the two cities. Saw what they did there. So it says here, Miami's version includes the following: Cuban bread, ham, pork, Swiss cheese, a couple of pickles, mustard, and that's it. That's Ricardo Morales of Old's Havana Cuban Bar and Cocina in Miami. Now, apparently, the Tampa version became popular in the mid-1800s after the tobacco industry moved there from Key West. And it was a sort of representation of different kinds of meats that sort of all fit together the cultural mosaic of Tampa. Yeah, so their version actually also includes salami. Genoa salami. That's got peppercorns in it. So they, too, have their own version of the Cuban sandwich that is different than the Miami version. But I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that you go, 17 down, city known for its Cuban sandwiches, and it's not Miami. If nothing else, what else are we known for more than our Cuban food and Cuban sandwiches? Beaches, okay, I'll go with you there. Nightlife, perhaps. But it's at least in the top five. I was dumbfounded at the idea that they would have gone for Tampa there. And I'm glad that the New York Times has apologized. However, it's not enough.
Weren't we like one of the most stressed cities between like Hialeah? I think Hialeah is one of the most stressed
most
cities.
Most stressed cities.
Yeah. There was a poll that came out with that.
Well, I mean, we certainly do earn distinctions for a lot of things. I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in Pembroke Pines, and I remember a news report came out that Pines Boulevard and Flamingo Road, the intersection of those two, was among the most dangerous in the country for the amount of accidents that happen. Now, I mean, it's a massive intersection, and it's all regulated by stoplights. I mean, I don't know. Frankly, I don't know how intersections that are regulated by stoplights can be dangerous. what more is to it? And then we had an event in Hialeah at Hooters during the NCAA tournament. And driving there, I was like, oh, I was born in Hialeah. Now I've got some credibility. I could be Hialeah Chris if I wanted to be.
Palmetto Hospital or Hialeah Hospital?
Hialeah Hospital.
Nice.
Yeah, I was born in Hialeah, and however, I was not gifted with the ability to drive in Hialeah. I hadn't been in a very long time. I went once because I was running an errand there. It was 10 years ago, and so I had not been since, for this event, and I'm driving, kind of the roundabout way. I didn't get in the Palmetto and then get off because it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a lot of traffic, and so I get there, I get into the Hialeah area, and I have to like stop at a gas station. And I have to make a U-turn, and I'm cut off like 7 times, and people are honking at me because I'm not moving the instant that the light turns green. It's mayhem. It legitimately is mayhem to drive through Hialeah. So I can understand that level of stress, perhaps for those not used to it. Because for the people that just live there, it's just their life, right? It's what you're used to. But man, I can understand how people just driving through Hialeah on a random Thursday night, like, what in the blue hell is going on here? So I can understand that level of stress.
Why is Tampa even doing Cuban sandwiches, by the way? Don't they just do like Busch Gardens and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I really associate very. Apparently, they have decent Cuban food in Tampa, but yeah, I mean, when people in my like, do people in Miami have thoughts about Tampa? Like, what do you think about when you think of Tampa?
It's Busch Gardens.
Yeah, Busch Gardens. That's it. That's what you go there for. You go there, you go to Busch Gardens, and you come back.
I don't even think you rent a hotel there.
Right. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, it's a day trip. It's a day trip to Busch Gardens. I also think of the giant bridge, that huge bridge. It scares the crap. I remember the first time you look at that bridge in the horizon, you go, wait, we have to drive over that thing? It's genuinely horrifying. I remember the first time I drove, I was speaking of day trips, it was a full-on day trip for a University of Miami game against USF that they played away when I was in college. And the first time you drive over that bridge, like, my God, this thing is terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. But again, shame on the New York Times. How could you? How could you? New York Times. But I want to get to something here that is more related to sports. There is a great story written by Zach Lowe. I mean, legitimately, I want to read the whole story on the air. So Zach Lowe, and he calls himself the Elgin Baylor of the press corps in the drawing of the NBA lottery. The NBA has a few reporters in there just to kind of add some credibility to the proceedings so that, people don't think it's this clandestine thing that's done without anyone looking at it. It probably should be on television, but, we can't do that. So Zach Lowe is in the drawing room. So there are different representatives. So the coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, Alvin Gentry, is in the drawing room, and Jeff Griffin is on the day. David Griffin is on the stage on the dais where they announce the picks, and the deputy commissioner opens the envelope and says, "Number one pick, New Orleans Pelicans." He's the one that gets to go crazy. But in the drawing room, he says that the most an executive has celebrated was Dell Demps, who was then the general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans. He celebrated when New Orleans won the Anthony Davis lottery. He says he's been in the drawing room since 2011, and Dell Demps pumped his fist under a table and stifled one celebratory grunt. That is the most an executive has ever celebrated. Alvin Gentry, though, was not having it because he knew how big this lottery could be for his future and for his team. Alvin Gentry, the Pelicans coach and representative in the drawing room, threw all decorum out the window when the fourth ping pong ball was drawn, number 13, to complete the combination that belonged to New Orleans. Gentry rose from his chair and shouted, "Bleep yeah!" at the top of his lungs. He raised his arms in celebration and even turned to high-five six rival team representatives behind and around him. They reciprocated. "Sorry, sorry," Gentry said to the room as he sat back down, and the drawing continued for the second, third, and fourth picks. He didn't need to apologize. Apparently, people in the league are sympathetic to Alvin Gentry and what happened to him this year with the Anthony Davis thing. And in general, there is a good feeling about New Orleans winning that because of what they dealt with the Anthony Davis thing. But, I mean, for a room of kind of tight people that aren't necessarily, you know, wanting to celebrate in front, I love the visual image of Alvin Gentry standing up in a room and shouting bleep yeah at the top of his lungs to celebrate getting Zion Williamson. And then another incredible anecdote from the story, somehow the second best lottery anecdote as it relates to New Orleans. So Alvin Gentry wore a tie, a black tie with silver gray striping. It was his good luck charm, which David Griffin gave to him. Now, there is a story behind that tie. David Griffin was a member of the front office for Cleveland. Of course, he was general manager when LeBron came. And during the time in which David Griffin was in the front office of the Cleveland Cavaliers, from 2011 to 2014, they sent the same man into the drawing room. His name was Jeff Cohen, used to be vice chair for the Cavs and a confidant of owner Dan Gilbert. In those 4 years that he went into the drawing room, Cleveland won the lottery 3 times. So he's been kind of referred to as a warlock, right? As someone who just, he wins the lottery. You send him in, he comes out. Now, Cleveland and this guy named Jeff Cohen had a falling out. And in the last 2 lotteries, Cleveland has not done anything. Now, that could also just be circumstance, but the ultimate plot twist comes from Alvin Gentry. The tie that Gentry wore Tuesday was the same one that Cohen had worn in each of his 3 lottery wins. Griffin had called Cohen asking for a good luck charm. Cohen scoffed at the idea that any trinket could win the favor of the lottery gods, Zach Lowe writes. Griffin asked if he might please send the tie. Cohen did. Griffin passed it on to Alvin Gentry. And Zach Lowe writes, put Jeff Cohen and his damned tie in the Hall of Fame. Gentry said he's going to frame the tie and the lottery balls and hang it in the Pelicans practice facility. That is a great story. Now, I'm generally the person that's always going, what the hell are you talking about with your superstition? I do sometimes do it with my dad. We're watching a game. We'll switch seats on the couch. If a shirt's going, we'll wear the same shirt across multiple games. We did this a lot in the Big Three era. The Big Three era was high on superstitions. My dad, I think, wore the same jersey for like 7 straight games because the Heat were going strong in those 7. And then when they lost, it was on to the next one. So I do it mostly as a joke. But I mean, there are people that genuinely believe in these superstitions that make it a point on their couch to do something, in, you know, at home that they think is, you know, wear a shirt or sit in a particular position or watch it with a certain group of people. And if that group of people lose, then I mean, I know of a team in sports that, so they have a rotating analyst for their TV broadcasts. And if the analyst is commentating on a losing game, they will not call him back until the team has lost again. And like, it is legitimately in the calculus of who they choose for their broadcasts, whether or not you win or lose when you're on the call. And so this is not unfamiliar. And normally I think it's nonsense, but this damn tie has won 4 out of the last 9 lotteries. Won them. Number 1 overall pick. 1 tie from the same dude. I agree with Zach Lowe. This guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame. This guy absolutely has earned himself a place in the lore of NBA history. To me, I love the idea that there are organizational conversations, right? David Griffin calls Alvin Gentry and goes, what are we going to do so we can be lucky in this next lottery? What are we going to do? And they come up, you know, David Griffin's going, who do I know that's lucky? Secretary, get me Jeff Cohen on the phone and get me his tie. Like, it's just like the idea that would even enter the thought for David Griffin. And apparently he was telling people at the lottery, I'm going to win this. I'm telling you, I'm going to win this. What a great story. the tie that has Zion Williamson on the New Orleans Pelicans. I want to get to that actually from a couple of angles later on in the show, because obviously there is the angle of New Orleans now is really set up. I mean, Mion obviously having the number one pick. There was actually a thought for a while that you'd trade Anthony Davis for the number one overall pick, whoever was going to get it. But now you have Zion Williamson and Anthony Davis, and there's some conversation about we're going to try and keep him, and we apparently Adrian Wojnarowski was saying on television that was being broadcast into the lottery room that New Orleans is drafting Zion Williamson to pair with Anthony Davis, and apparently Alvin Gentry in the room shouted bleep yeah at the television again. This Alvin Gentry seems like a character. I think I want to go out for a beer with Alvin Gentry the next time he comes into town. But they want to pair him, right? But let's be honest, Anthony Davis wants to go, and he's got a year left on his deal. There are teams that are willing to offer some incredible things in return. You have the ability to start your team from scratch. So there's that. And then there's this whole idea that's kind of surfaced, and Colin Cowherd, I thought, had a very reasonable opinion, which is Eli Manning didn't want to play for the San Diego Chargers. He forced a move to the New York Giants. He's still there. People don't really think about that anymore. John Elway, I think he was drafted to go to Cleveland, I think. And, he was threatening to go play for the New York Yankees if, you know, Cleveland took him with the number one overall pick, and so they traded it. I forget the actual story. It was one of the 30 for 30s. But either way, didn't want to be on one team, ended up with the Broncos, and then was there for 15 years. People don't really remember that much or hold it against John Elway. So why would an NBA player do that? Why would an NBA player say, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to sign your contract. I'm not going to go unless you trade me. And so there's that idea, just in general, the notion of the drawing of ping pong balls being the reason that one team has the number one overall pick and another doesn't. And that drawing of ping pong balls being, I mean, think about this. If your career, if the life that you were about to lead for the next 4 and most likely 7 years was determined by a ping pong ball machine, where you're going to live, who you were going to work for, was going to be determined by a ping pong ball machine. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. Why isn't Zion Williamson just allowed to choose where he wants to go? And so there's kind of been this thought of, well, why couldn't Zion Williamson figure out a way to choose where he wants to go? And is it worth reforming the system? So we'll get to that later on in the show. But coming up next, we're going to be at 7 o'clock joined by Connor Rogers, who is a host for Bleacher Report. And he's a big Jets guy. And so he hosts a show for Bleacher Report called Stick to Football. And so I want to talk to him about this Adam Gase thing. And I want to sort of unfurl for me, what are the reasons why Adam Gase didn't work in Miami? It just didn't work. And so what are the things that, at the moment, it looks like he's doomed to repeat? We'll get to that next year on WQAM. Chris Whittingham here on 560 WQAM here until 10 p.m. this evening. I should let you know what's going on in the world of sports. Tonight, we have the PGA Championship done with its first round. And at the top of the leaderboard, Brooks Koepka with a 63 on the day and is well clear at the top of the leaderboard. He is... Actually, he's not well clear. He's along with Danny Lee well clear. Danny Lee is one shot off of Brooks Koepka at 7-under. Tiger Woods on the day finishing 2-over. So after day one, 9 shots off the lead. So Tiger with quite a mountain to climb is kind of mid-level in the leaderboard at Bethpage Black in New York. So the PGA, which normally is the last major of the year, trying to move it up to sort of increase its relevance. But Brooks Koepka topping the leaderboard, 7-under. Danny Lee, 6-under. So obviously Tiger Woods well off it there. And then we have NBA basketball tonight as we have Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. I think after Game 1, I would not be surprised if this is a very quick series. Now, the thing is that Golden State, has made work of all of their series, including their first rounder against the Clippers. So you can't be that confident about it. But the way that Golden State is playing right now, sans Kevin Durant, is the team that you kind of came to expect when they were winning championships even without him, and winning 73 games even without him. And they are at that level. So Golden State taking on the Portland Trail Blazers tonight at 9 p.m. And then the Miami Marlins, I'm honestly starting to feel bad for them at this point. They're actually off tonight, but they lose again yesterday, 1-0. They continue to be fundamentally incapable of scoring runs. They so far have won less than 25% of their games, which in baseball is almost impossible. I mean, it is stunning how bad they are. They played almost a quarter of the season. They've won 10 games. They're on pace for 40 victories. You don't see baseball teams that bad. I mean, for me, the baseline is 55, right? I mean, the worst team gets to 55 wins. I mean, in that scenario, you're still losing 107, right? But the worst case scenario is 55 victories. And now you're on pace for 40 after a quarter of the season. They can't score any runs. They can't score any runs. It's just, I mean, I actually had the chance to talk to their ace yesterday, Caleb Smith. Really nice guy, really cool story. And legitimately an ace. Like, people would go, that's the Marlins, he's their best pitcher. Is it really an ace? Is it really an ace? When it's the Marlins. By the way, I swear, I'm going to check it. Last Thursday, I was on this air doing this show. And I believe at that point I said that the Marlins had 102 runs on the year. Now it had to have been 101 because that... It was 102. Because that day, they had lost at Chicago to the Cubs 4-1. And since they played four games, one of which was postponed in New York, they had an off day Monday and an off day Thursday. This feels like a vacation for baseball players. They've had three of the last 5 days off. But since then, the Marlins have lost 11-2, 4-1, 4-0, and 1-0. So in the week since we last spoke to you on this radio program, at this time, the Miami Marlins have scored 3 times. They've gone from 102 to 105. They are now 38 runs off the second worst offense in the league, which is currently held by the Detroit Tigers, who have 143. That 38 is somewhere, it gets you to around 20. The Marlins right now have 140 fewer runs than the Houston Astros, who have 245. Again, we're a quarter of the way through the season. And the Marlins are actually middle of the pack in terms of runs allowed. They are, I'm going to do quick math here. I think they're 14th in the league in runs allowed. That's not bad. They can't score a run. Can't score a run. They've been shut out 10 times, I believe, on the season. It's remarkable. So they're going to be in it for a long time. We talked about that last week. They're going to be in it for a long time. So those are the benefits or the detriments of the tanking process. Is in baseball in particular, it takes a while to come back up. But the Dolphins are actually another team that are linked with potentially not really being that interested in winning. And I want to get to this Adam Gase thing. So coming up next, we're going to talk to Connor Rogers, who is big on the Jets, works for Bleacher Report, hosts a show called Stick to Football. And we're going to talk about Adam Gase with him and how Adam Gase has pretty spectacularly failed up. He went from being fired by the Dolphins, kind of ran out of here, was kind of inevitable when he was going to go, that he was going to go, right? That he was going to be fired because that Indianapolis result, because of the way that it all fell apart at the end of the season, just kind of fell, all right, it's Adam Gase's time to go. And Stephen Ross delivered on the Monday. He was out. Chris Greer was in. And we didn't really, because obviously you're thinking about in the moment, but 3 months later, 4 months later from when that happened, we can kind of debrief a little bit. What happened to Adam Gase? What happened that this hot candidate of the month was going to change the Dolphins organization, be the latest offensive genius to change the downtrodden fortunes of the Miami Dolphins. And for me, his failures were in two areas. Number one, way too conservative. Way too conservative. This is an offensive genius. Generally, the Sean McVays of the world, the Andy Reids of the world, the top level coaches and offensive minds are go, 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 go. Fly up the field. Try and score points. Try and create an offense that's 42 points a game. And for me, when I'm thinking of Adam Gase coordinating the 55 passing touchdown offense of Peyton Manning, I think that's at least what he has in mind. It's hard to deliver that. It's an all-time great quarterback playing at that high of a level. It's damn near impossible for a team to play at that level, right? It's hard. It's hard to get your team into that stratosphere of offense where it feels like every time they touch the ball, they're going to go and score. Particularly when you have Ryan Tannehill as your quarterback, the skill positions were not as strong. But at the same time, it really felt like Adam Gase's idea of genius was basically being able to take any quarterback and engineer a 95 quarterback rating, right? We're not going to throw interceptions. We're not going to take a lot of chances. We're not going to throw the ball deep. We're going to complete a lot of passes. We're going to try and move the ball down the field. And you know what? If it's 4th and 7 and we got a punt, fine. But we're not going to give the ball to the other team. And it's a reasonable thought to have because generally turnovers are a pretty positive indicator or negative indicator of winning and losing in football. Generally, the degree to which you turn the ball over is an indicator of how much you're going to lose. But Adam Gase took it to a whole nother level, and a level that really disappointed me. Like, quickly, you kind of looked at it and went, oh, this isn't the offensive genius that's going to have the Dolphins looking like the other teams that have the great offenses. I mean, the Rams have had it twice in the last 20 years. Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. And some of that is, a lot of it is quarterback-based, but some of it, I mean, I don't know if Jared Goff's the greatest quarterback in the world. Los Angeles sure as hell looks like one of the greatest offenses in the world with Sean McVay as their coach. And so, as a Dolphins fan, I'm just dying to see that once in my life. Once. Week in, week out. Offense. Gonna get you 31 points. Every week. They're a threat. Complete 60-yard touchdowns. It's fun to watch. I show up at the stadium and think I'm gonna watch a fun game. Not once in my life. I'm 26. In my life, I have not seen the Dolphins' offense be that kind of exciting. And so, I just want to see it once. And I want to see one of these offensive geniuses come in. And yet, Adam Gase did the exact opposite. He made his Dolphins look like the Dolphins I've been watching for my entire life. I haven't stopped seeing the 3 yards so that we don't throw the interception, minimize turnovers, dink and dunk, try and get a 16-play drive so you can score a touchdown. I mean, so, and I'm concerned for the Jets fans that it's going to look similar. And the other thing is that he kind of is a little bit of a my way or the highway, but in a more subtle way, right? I mean, letting Kenyon, sort of fading Kenyon Drake into the background. Probably because, and it's now been reported that Le'Veon Bell was not necessarily his idea of how to fix the Jets, right? Spending that kind of money on a running back. He wanted Tevin Coleman, it was reported by The Athletic. That kind of a player, just a solid player, probably enough to pay him as much, and I can get as much out of the running back position. Here, it was with Jarvis Landry that he seemed to have a problem the most with. Running off Jay Ajayi, when those are your star offensive talents. And look, if you want to make a system work and the system is the ultimate goal, I get it, but you're running off the talented players. And New England has a system, clearly, that they abide by. They don't sign high-priced free agents, but they have Tom Brady. They have the best coaching in the league. And they don't have one of the 10 worst offenses in football, which is what happened. And so, to me, Adam Gase, at the moment, appears to be doomed to repeat those mistakes. And all this promise and all this hype seems to be unfounded. We'll discuss it more with Connor Rogers of Bleacher Report next.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.